I'm Dr. Rose Aslan, and I'm a transformational life coach, breathwork teacher, and scholar of religion who supports helpers, rebels, misfits, marginalized, and spiritual and spiritually curious folks. Welcome to Rahma with Rose, where I create a bold space of warmth, understanding, and pluralism in a world that often feels chaotic, polarized, and judgmental. You are not alone, and the stories I share here will reinforce this. Each episode will delve into inspiring stories, practical tips, and thought-provoking and heartfelt conversations with thought leaders, healers, coaches, mental health professionals, and other individuals who are part of the quiet revolution of women healing around the world. So join me on this podcast exploration as we explore what happens when we allow compassion into our lives, one story at a time.
So kind of the way to put it is, I was working in coalition with a small group of Muslims on behalf of a bunch of Muslim organizations to help create a crisis response system after all these years among Muslim organizations. And that was extremely challenging. Then we went into action after Trump got elected. And I just went right back into that full-time mode and threw myself into it. And then we came into 2017. I decided to do a podcast to start to reclaim my personal voice because I had been speaking for we for so long, for us. I wanted to reclaim. There had been no I in so much of that work. It was only later as I realized and owned the power of personal storytelling and personal narrative through places like Amply that I even incorporated my story into. And yeah, so the podcast, I respect so much what you're doing. My podcast was called Meeting the Moment, and I wanted it to be a place where I could share my stories of meeting the moment, which is finding opportunities within crises, which is what I learned through my activism. And the most terrifying part of that podcast was the first 2 minutes when I would tell a personal story, because it was so unfamiliar to me. And the whole journey in 2018, I think I did the podcast for about 6 or 8 months. I realized, even listening to them now, that I was so concerned with not perfection, but like presentation, right? And I wanted to be edited out. I wanted it to sound so professional, which it wasn't sounding like me, right? And so this, I can see how 2018 was this pivotal year where I was trying to figure out how to be me. And what me, who me is, who, what I can share about me and what I can remember about me and what vulnerability I can begin to share. And I stopped working while I was doing the podcast. My husband and I asked him, can you be the breadwinner so that I can just do this? When I have multiple things, my projects go on the back burner, right? Self-sacrifice, codependency, all of it, trauma response. And so I was like, I need to clear field so that this is like the thing I'm doing. And yeah, we agreed to that. And then a couple of months later, he got bit by a flea in our backyard and it gave him some virus and he ended up in the hospital. Subhanallah. And alhamdulillah, he was okay, but it was a very touch and go situation for a day. And then he was unable to work for a little while. And that was the fire, like tell you this whole long story, because I could handle all the professional things. When it came home, and I no longer had a job to fix the problem, and I didn't control his health, and I couldn't, like, again, like all my zone of influence disappeared is when, and that became the time where, because I was like, okay, he's going to be back to work and he's getting healthier and everything. It wasn't like a long-term issue, but our finances fell apart. And because he's self-employed, I was a consultant and not working at that point, and we had savings, but again, everything fell apart and I didn't want to ring the bell for him. I didn't want to tell him that I was scared because he was just recovering in his own health. And so what happened next is that my back and my sciatica, the body keeps the score, and my body started to talk. And that's what I have learned, is that if we stuff it down, I can take it. Oh, yeah. First time it showed up on my face, And this time I was having, over the course of that summer, I started having some lower back pain. And I would like, remember, we would sit on our back stairs at night and look at the stars, and I would get up and I couldn't quite stand up straight. I was like, oh, and that I let that go on for a couple of months. I just, it'll get better. It'll get better. I'll walk, right? Until one day I sat down on the couch and I had a shooting pain from my left hip all the way down my left leg, pretty much. And I got up and I'm like, that's weird. And I tried to find another comfortable position. And every time I sat down from that point on, I had this shooting pain. Long story short, I lost my ability to drive. This was from, I want to say, October 2018. And again, it was getting progressively worse until I couldn't drive. And that was, my body fell apart. And that was when I decided I needed to do some, because I didn't want to spend money. I didn't have money. Like, we were like trying to deal with our finances. Everything's uncertain. We're parenting, right? That lack of control to deal with our own life scared me more than anything else. Like, I found my wall. And I was unwilling to admit I was afraid to my husband, and the body keeps the score. And so what I developed sciatica that was debilitating. I lost my ability to drive, and I couldn't figure out how I had done this to myself. I kept being everybody, like, I was like, well, did I lift my son? Like, again, I was looking for physical reasons. Like, how had this happened? How did I injure my back? Like, where did it was such a trip. And then a friend sent me an article, a link to an article that described how sciatica had emotional roots. And that it even pinpointed finances as one of the kinds of fears or uncertainties and fears that can come up. And so I was so in denial, and it just all made me so mad. It made me so mad. And because I was like, I can't afford to fix myself, but if I'm not working, nothing else works. And subhanAllah, again, that was my rock bottom, because I didn't want to spend money on myself. I kept going to the doctor, and what I was told was it'll heal on its own between 6 and 9 months. I cried. I was at a point where, again, I wasn't driving. I could only sleep for an hour and a half at a time because I couldn't.
You tell me the doctors had no...
They had no solution. No, they gave me a pain shot, like at some point in my hip. I say it in this long way because it was not purely physical. Mm-hmm. I realizing that the doctors couldn't help me was this, oh my God, I have to save my own life. That was my rock bottom, was I am not waiting 6 or 9 months. Like, how can I heal this faster? Because again, it like ruined my life. You can't even describe. Anyway, with no money, I first went to acupuncture. I remember it was Thanksgiving of that year, and I went to acupuncture and paid $125 for an hour of acupuncture, and cried that I was spending the money, and cried that I was in so much pain. And I was like weeping from the pain of even just laying there, and let alone everything. But it gave me even 30 minutes of relief. And at that point, I was like debilitated. And then a friend said, you know what? Go see my body worker. She does acupressure and craniosacral, which is about the fluids between things, and yeah, and your vagus nerve and all this stuff. And I'm like, what the what? But I'm in so much pain that I'm desperate, right? So I take 2 metros to go see this woman, and she begins to work on my body, and she's pushing around my torso, and she pushes on my lower belly, top of my pelvic bone. And I scream, and she takes a pause. And she says, how old were you? And then, and that's the beginning of the rest of my journey, in which I knew exactly what she meant. And she was right, which was that how old were you when you were violated, molested, abused? And like, I felt so exposed and confused. And I said to her, I think I was a young child. I think I was between 5 and 7, something like that. And this is not what I expected to come in here for. And yeah, thank God I can laugh with it's just the stunning things, just entering the journey of addressing my physical pain uncovered these other things. And this woman began to work on my body and my soul at the same time, and became not even a therapist, but like we talked through those stories and all the stuff that was going on in there. And that's when I began to make this connection to the body keeps the score. How could she put just push on a place, like not even intensely push on a place in my body, right? And no. And that like idea, again, that the body keeps the score and what is everything that's been trapped. And like, it just came together in this moment around, oh, it is emotional pain and oh my God, and so many things. And so it was the beginning of the healing journey because I realized that everything I had gone through was still in there. And that, I don't know, that I had to begin to face that and go back to the beginning. Because my professional activism in so many ways was about fighting for my little girl, fighting for my little Adina and all the ways in my childhood and my extended family and my direct family that I, didn't feel like I could stand up for myself. And yeah, God bless my family. It wasn't anybody in my direct family who was my abuser, but I never told anybody. At that point, I hadn't told my family. I told my best friend and my close friends. But this was also around the Me Too time, right? The Me Too era. And so again, the convergence of so many things, it was like a volcano. That's the only thing I can describe is it's just so many factors that led me to my rock bottom where I could no longer ignore these things and throw myself into work. Until that point, right? Like anytime I was uncomfortable, I could just go back to work. Like work made more sense than other things. And so I went to that woman every week for the next 6 months. And even though I couldn't drive and she was on the other side of town and my life slowed down completely I have come to believe that when we don't lay down, Allah will lay us down. Yes. That I was unwilling to slow down and face it all. And that this pain stopped me in my tracks and it forced me to slow down. And I spent a lot of time with myself and a lot of time with myself. And so when you talked about the body keeps the score, it was while I was taking the metro once or twice a week, all the way from Pasadena to Santa Monica, because that's where my body worker was. So again, an hour each way. Like my husband is making fun of me because I'm taking an hour metro, like walking to the metro, because I can't sit down. So I'm standing on the metro. Yeah, taking this long journey to Santa Monica and then walking and then getting the treatment and then doing it all back. It was like a 4 or 5 hour thing. And I'm like, I can't do anything else anyway. It's not like I'm wasting my day. I couldn't physically think straight enough to work. Like it was just parenting. That's when I listened to The Body Keeps the Score. That's when I started to try to figure out what the hell is happening here. What is going on inside of me and how do I begin to take this apart? I read a book called Parenting from the Inside Out that made me realize that attachment styles from childhood and childhood trauma and all these things were all connected. And so I was beginning to be exposed to myself. And then I went into therapy deep and hardcore as well. I did acupuncture therapy, the body worker. Vitamins and supplements. I was doing everything possible to try to accelerate this healing journey. And it did end up, October to March I was able to get the pain down. So that was like 5 months. So I had shortened, because that was my goal, was to shorten those 8 or 9 months. And then I had this, it was the false confidence. It was like a month or two where I was good. And I threw myself back at everything, false confidence, and it came back. And that, again, it was like this is how Allah spoke to me. My body kept talking to me. And that is what I have become more connected to. I also started going to Kundalini yoga a long time ago, but I doubled down during this time because the stretching and the breathing, I realized through my body worker that my vagus nerve was the problem. And the freeze response is what was happening. Like this was just the ultimate freeze response, is that my body was freezing. And that's what sciatica was, is that the vagus nerve was caught in there because of the freeze. And so for the first time, I felt like I was in my body is the shortest way I could describe all of this. It was the first time that I was acutely aware of my body and that I was no longer a brain on a stick. And it was that extreme. And there's no going back. Everything I do now, is in service of my future self. Because what I realized, I was 40, 43 at the time, maybe I'm 46 now, 42, that like, this is my midlife realignment, my midlife reawakening. It's not just a crisis, it's a wake up. And if I'm at the halfway point in my life, like this is a calling and an invitation to realign myself for the second half. Because what I have been doing, like what I have been doing has been in survival and in service, right? And in hustle and improving and in growing. And but like just, and now, inshallah, if I am blessed with this being the beginning of my second half, inshallah, what do I leave? What do I take? What do I leave behind? And what do I reclaim? And I decided I wanted to reclaim little Adina and let her speak and really fall in love with her and bring her forward, because I did not talk about my childhood to many people at all. Yeah. So I stepped back into myself and it's been a beautiful journey. I stopped doing the podcast because I was in so much pain and I wasn't ready to tell people. So that's why I can remember now that I got through the second bout by summer. And then that's when our mutual friend, Samia Abubakar, who was the managing, who's the engine of AMCLI, the American Muslim Civic Leadership Institute for a decade, she was suggesting to me that I bring my story to the AMCLI reunion. And we just said burnout. And to me, it was like, it was the burnout workshop. And I'm like, oh God, Samia, I'm not, really? I'm not sure that I'm ready to talk about it, because I'd withdrawn so that I could just focus on myself, and talking about it beyond safe people was so hard. Like the tears were always just right under the surface. But it was a leap of faith, because just like in 2006, before we started AMCLI and New Ground, I knew that other people were feeling what I was feeling. I just knew it. And I didn't want anybody to feel as alone and as without tools and as helpless as I felt. Like I felt really, truly like I had to save my own life. And I didn't want other people to feel that way. And so that's why I agreed to give that workshop. And it was the most terrifying thing I've ever done publicly, because talking about all the bullshit is so much easier. Yeah. Talking to Bill O'Reilly about bullshit is so much easier than talking about my body turning on me and not turn. It's so sad, even I'm trying to work on that language, but my body really waking me up to everything it was carrying and waking me up to myself. Enough, Adina, enough.
Yeah. Adina, as someone who was there, I can say that it resonated so strongly with me, and it really helped me wake up to hear two really powerful women leaders in the community telling it like it was, and just explaining like what happened, what they needed to change their lives, what went wrong, you know. And I don't know if any other people came around and shared with you what they took away, but it was such a powerful session. I've been to many workshops in my life, but that one definitely stands out.
It was for me too, because this was like, wasn't there like 50, 75 people there?
It was quite large, I think, because everyone was feeling burnt out.
Really, that's the thing. It was in the air. And especially because we were years into Trump by that point, it was, again, like when we just think about everything that we've been through in these younger generations. And it was such a gift, because many people, women and men, reached out to me from that group. And to be that vulnerable in front of my peers, who many of them I knew looked up to me.
So someone, you know, who was at the workshop, and I was really moved by your authenticity of you and Sara just telling it like it was, because I was also at the end of my burnout as a professor, and I hadn't contemplated leaving at that point, but I was so burnt out and I didn't know it. And I also had physical health issues, and I was also going to healers and doing all the same things. And just to know there was others like myself in leadership position was really impactful for me. And as I'm listening to you tell the story of how your body broke down, and then as you started to heal, I felt very tight in my chest. I was like, I could just feel that, like the challenges, right? Like the financial challenges of, that's why I had to leave the United States, because financially it wasn't viable to stay in the United States as a single mother, literally. Like how when you didn't have a job, your husband got sick, how all of us can so quickly lose our lives, the current status of our lives, just with a succession of incidents, medical issues, losing a job, everything. We can lose everything. It's also a reminder of tawakkul, of why we need to depend on God. But so I just felt that all my body tightened up. I wonder how you felt that telling this story, especially because I know you haven't shared it too much. How did it feel to tell that story?
It feels really sad. Talking about that time, my body goes back to that time. And I often disassociate, right? I lose myself and go back to that place. It's sometimes hard to talk about that time because, yeah, I just sink back into that time and I remember, oh my God, I cried so much. I cried every day. I cried every day. And just from pain, from sadness, and like the pain is a cause of depression. And the connection I felt to anybody in chronic pain, the connection I felt to my mother who had been in chronic pain for most of her life, the guilt I felt around not having compassion for people before, like again, until you feel deep physical pain, like every moment, there's just nothing like it, right? And so it just changed my orientation to life. I'd be walking down the street and I would see somebody limping and I would like physically feel connected to them, right? Like spiritually, that empathy link was, oh, like my heart goes out to you, right? Like just the fullness of myself began to develop. But oh my God, that time I have never felt more vulnerable going through it. And then standing up in front of my peers, people I respected and admired, to say I could no longer do it, even though I knew it was an act of courage. It felt like an act of weakness, right? Because the grit your teeth, stay strong. We're activists, right? Like persevere. All the Islamic messaging around, yeah, exactly. Just
she had enough
patient perseverance. Like, well, and patient perseverance. And I believe in staying power and the denial of the self. Just go back to Allah. If you're feeling tired, it's all just go pray and just seek more help from Allah. And so feeling like this was weakness, right? Like that it was failure or weakness more than it was like a natural consequence of my life and of my environment and everything else. It was extremely overwhelming. And I was, oh God, doing that workshop, I was sweating. I was more embarrassed. Like afterwards, somebody came up to me who had never really seen me speak before in this network. Because that was the thing. I was like, some of these people I know and know me, but for the ones who have no reference point, like this is how I'm introducing myself, was so vulnerable. And let me tell you my rock bottom story. Like it was so awful. And so this one woman came up to me afterwards. She's like, I loved your presentation. And I noticed like you could use a little smoothing out. And like there, she like, suggested I go to a speaking workshop. And I felt so...
She did not get the message.
It was okay. But you get where she was coming from. And I only share it because I felt this. It was like this deep, like, oh yeah, man. It was like holding up a mirror around. I felt so unstable giving that workshop or so vulnerable and so sweaty and talking about like naked, right? Like to be talking about my pain instead of, yeah, guys, we can do this. It was, oof, it was a lot. And then I was just barely out of the woods. It was still so fresh, which is why I was resistant to doing it. And thank God, Soraya Ahyuddin, who now runs Amply, she suggested that Sara and I pair up to do it, which was such a gift because it was so complimentary. And she brought a different side to the conversation that especially was focused on women of color, which is a different, obviously a different experience than I or you would have. And that, yeah, that spoke to even more people and women in the room. Yeah. And it was so sad. Like how many on the spot after the workshop, the rest of that day, there was at least a handful of men and women who came to me and said, uh-oh, like it was, yeah, that there was like, uh-oh, and tell me about the books and all just the thirst for it. It was sad. And it was also really cathartic. Yeah. I went to Samaya and said, thank you for pushing me and having this idea. Because I also, once again, I felt empowered, right? Like that all of this that I had been through and all of this figuring it out for myself and saving my own life, right? That I could share that with other people and be in service again. Like it started the next chapter and it has shaped everything that has happened since. But my God, that was the most vulnerable, like public sharing that I have ever done.
I feel so honored that I was there to witness it and be transformed by it as well. It came across as incredibly moving and something I needed to hear. So thank you for that a few years later.
Yeah, for sure.
A question for you. Now that you've gone through the roughest part, inshallah, there will not be another part like that. What tools do you call upon? Do you use? What's in your daily toolbox for regulating your nervous system, for being balanced in your daily life, especially as a mother of two younger children?
Yeah. I'm using the tools. They don't always work. They're tools. It's a different kind of slowing down. The hardest part of it is not a daily thing, it is too, but it was the decision to live a different life. the hardest part. And just like you, it's the decision to live a different life. It felt like giving up. One, it felt like giving up, right? Like, period. Giving up on activism, which, like, I don't know, like, my relevance, all this work, there's some sense of ego, not even, it's relevance, right? All of that stuff, like self-worth, not ego, self-worth. This is not a real tattoo. My daughter tattooed me.
For that's because I had a Care Bear?
Something like that. But yeah, just for anybody who's anti-tattoo. But so making the choice to live a different life and to give myself permission to not be an activist and to not even retire activism, but advance to another chapter. Like, that's what I came to, was this has been a chapter. And it was really hard to release that chapter because my self-worth, my identity, my self-knowing, and even the affirmations really that came with it, working in a team and working in a community, I got more affirmation. As hard as that time was, I was affirmed on a regular basis. It was a privilege to be affirmed and valued on a regular basis, even though it was grueling. I always knew my job mattered, right? Like, I knew my work, my days mattered. And giving that up is what it felt like, giving that up and choosing myself. Ooh, that felt so nafsy, meaning like selfish, right? Like, for myself, like, I'm choosing myself over the work, the activism, the service. That it's not a daily choice, but it's a daily reminder that I have to do, is that I'm still in daily service. Like, it's, that was not the only way, but it was just the only way that I knew for so long. And it was so valued and affirmed and so obvious, right? But now I'm reclaiming and going personal and repaving a path. Like, I'm now working on a new project. Thank God. And when I left activism and went into consulting, I was afraid nothing was ever going to be that good, that important, that soul filling, just as much it was soul draining. It was also so gratifying to feel so useful. And so, so I waited and prayed and waited and prayed in my daily practices. I'm still working on my 5 daily salat, hasn't clicked yet, but I talk to Allah all the time. And I start my days with a cup of coffee on the porch. My kids know it's like my coffee meditation time, which really is me sitting on the porch with my cup of coffee. And I play a morning adhkar or dhikr, or a remembrance of God track from Omar Hisham. And that's my morning meditation, is not looking at the phone, but just sitting there with my coffee and starting the day in remembrance and listening to the birds and just trying to be present. That's a daily tool that I really, when I don't do it, I don't feel centered. And I also have learned to breathe. I have not gone through breathing classes. I have all that physical pain also is in my head every day. So I am called to move physically as often as possible. And when I'm stressed, now the sciatica is at like a 1 or a 2 every day. It's on a scale of 1 to 10. If you're a pain measurer, right? And then there are times where I'm like, oh, I feel the ping, right? Where I just feel like when I'm driving, I feel a little bit more in my leg somewhere. I'm like, oh, there's like a 3, right? Like, it's just these little reminders. And then that's my call to, oh, I haven't been walking every day, or I haven't been going to yoga. I try to, even if I don't go to yoga, stretching has really become an important thing because of learning about the vagus nerve, which is like your inner stick figure. There's one nerve that I love it. That's when I looked at it, that's what I think about it as. And so stretching helps move that. They call it your life nerve. I never knew all this stuff before this. I thought this was all woo. Straight up thought it was woo. And that it's science. This is how Allah created us. I am trying to learn more about this body that Allah created, and that's this perfect design. And that it's, again, it's speaking to me. Every time I feel something, I'm like, oh, what's it telling me? Sarah, in that workshop, she said, emotions are messengers that are trying to tell you something, which is something that she learned. And that's the main tool that I use on a daily basis for my body, is the emotions and sensations. It's, again, these are signals. And so the choice is whether I'm listening or I'm ignoring, or I'm, again, diminishing. And so it's paying attention to those things and then feeding my body and soul every day a little bit. Like, it's, yeah. And so my supplement game, I'm going to talk about physical movement. I have mostly been in weekly therapy this whole time. Since my mom passed, I switched to a grief group, like a weekly grief group, talking and sharing with one person, a therapist, or a support group is critical. Through Amply and Newground and every other fellowship program that I've been a part of inside or out, the power of circles, talking circles, healing circles, like it's the feminine and it's also as old as time, and that our bodies connect and our, like, I mean, with every, I see your life in Turkey and your dhikr circles and music and all of this, just reacquainting myself with my body. The last thing I'll say too is that hot water for me is everything. Like, water is very healing for me. I grew up near the ocean in San Diego. And so when I want to connect to Allah and I want to, like, going to the beach is a blessing when I can do it. And so that helps. But then on the other hand, when I had the sciatica, the only thing that would even give me temporary relief was insanely hot showers. Like, it, somehow the heat would just, like, overwhelm, right? It's like when a baby's screaming and you scream to interrupt. I don't know. That was the beginning of it, was realizing that hot water, hot baths, and then now like a jacuzzi, right? Like any submersion. I don't have a good bathtub at home. It's like too small to really get a good bath in it. But the power of hot water and submersion, I know for some, yeah, the ice cold water and all of that, but subhanAllah, God gives us the tools, right? Like, it's a different way of feeling into ourselves. So I spend a lot more time trying to feel every day.
I can relate so much to all of this, mm-hmm. Adina. So many of my practices are very similar to you. And it's going from a brain on a stick to being in the body. That's what it is. And listening to what it has to tell us, the emotions, sensations, pain. What a beautiful messenger it can be to remind us to take care of ourselves better. So thank you for sharing all that. I'm sure it's very useful for people to hear what actual tools does someone like yourself use. Very practical, useful tools. To wrap up, do you have any pearls of wisdom you want to share with people listening? So on the healing path, what would you like to share with them? What's some life lessons?
Oh boy. The hardest and the simplest is I want to go back to what you know, which is the power of breath. That if we are believers in God, as my mentor, Dr. Myra too, taught me and so many of us, if each of us are a singular breath of God, that God said be and it is, right? And so each of us, God said be. And so we were, right? And so we're a breath of God. And the breath that runs inside of us and outside of us is a connection between us and God. If we're a breath of God, our whole existence is a breath. And so going back to our breathing to reconnect to God and ourselves and our bodies feels like the most essential thing. And then I also have learned about the power of nose breathing.
Yay, nose breathing.
I'm so mad.
That nobody breathing through your mouth.
Nobody, I'm so mad. Then again, these just like, these basic like how tools for being in a body, things are not taught. Like that when you breathe through your mouth, it's just like a status quo, basically. Yeah. But when you breathe through your nose, you're sending that cleansing breath into your bloodstream, into your organs, throughout your body, that it's working, your whole body is working so much harder and it's an activating. Yeah, I can't help but make these motions because that when all else fails, going back to the breath is going back to Allah. The box breathing, the in for four, hold for four, out for four, hold for four, just doing that for 3 minutes can reset your nervous system so that you can at least come to some kind of grounded place. It may not be fully grounding, but the longer that you do that, again, we have the tools within us. And what I spent my journey looking for was all of these tools outside. I was like, doctors, help me, fix me. In the therapy, oh, and I forgot to mention EMDR. Eye movement desensitization reprocessing is a therapeutic tool that uses your eye movement, which your eyes are connected to your brain. Again, this is all the body keeps the score. Because I have learned about my body, I can use my body to heal my body and heal my feelings. The eyes are part of the brain. And so eye movement, lateral back and forth eye movement, while you're thinking about traumatic memories, can move them to the active part of your daily brain, move them from that side to the long-term memory side of your brain, where it's not a part of your like daily vocabulary anymore. I call it the washing machine for the memories. Like, it's a really incredible tool. And again, so it goes back to breath and it goes back to the reconnection with the body. So whatever way you can find time to sit with yourself. Some people can't meditate, right? If you struggle with prayer, I even just, again, my morning coffee meditation, some form of stillness and just, yeah, stillness, breath, and being presence, yeah, in your body, right? That's the most profound thing I can say and the most simple thing. And it doesn't have to be a lot. That's the thing. Yeah, it doesn't have to be a lot.
Thank you, Adina. I so appreciate your vulnerability today, just in offering yourself and your story without censoring yourself, just being yourself after a lifetime of censoring yourself, a lifetime of telling people what they want to hear. Like, it's just beautiful to hear your story on this path. And I really hope, and I really know that others will benefit from hearing as well. So thank you for sharing and for being so open.
Oh, it's a blessing. I thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so gratified and grateful to God because I believed and trusted and prayed that in sharing, again, like that, yeah, that it would help others see themselves and help them give themselves permission to save themselves before they hit bottom. Like, so for anybody who has made it this far into this podcast, look me up, reach out. I'm on IG at Edlek, E-D-L-E-K, and reach out because we're in a sisterhood and we're in this journey together. And aloneness is one of the hardest ways to go through this. So know that you're not alone, whether you are physically or not.
Yes. And I'll be adding her Instagram handles to the show notes if you need to find them. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Rose.
Are you looking for help bringing more compassion into your life and letting yourself out of the box and into the real you? I'd love to support you on your journey. Check out my one-on-one and group coaching offers and sign up for my mailing list to receive updates about my offers. Follow me on Instagram and Facebook under Dr. Rose Aslan Coaching or visit my website, compassionflow.com.